Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. More than 40 million Americans speak Spanish, and millions more are learning. For all of you, I'd like to recommend NPR's Radio Ambulante. It's the podcast to hear incredible stories from all over Latin America and across the U.S. Hosted by novelist Daniel Alarcón, Radio Ambulante covers the region like no one else, reporting and storytelling in Español. Radio Ambulante is on NPR One or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Look, guys, I know the world outside is getting crazy, but look on the bright side. Television's never been better.
Good point, Stephen, but I bet you can't sing it.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Dear friends, the next time the world's problems make you feel the blues, turn on any channel, well, except the news, cause trouble.
Hey, Stephen Thompson.
Hey, Linda Holmes. We're here late on Sunday to run down the winners of the Emmy Awards that took place earlier this evening. There was host Stephen Colbert, who you just heard. There were some politics, and it was a great night for The Handmaid's Tale and Saturday Night Live.
That's right. And unlike the Oscars, it didn't go on for endless hours. And spoiler alert, it didn't end with opening the wrong envelope. But there's a lot to talk about on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour, so stick around.
Yes, everything.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Helix, where one test can provide a lifetime of personal insights, from nutrition and fitness to family planning and entertainment. At Helix.com, discover a marketplace of DNA-powered products and find out what your DNA can tell you. Helix, crack your code.
Before we get started, let's explain who's part of our own late-night talk show. With us is our regular panelist, Glenn Weldon. Hi, Glenn.
Hey.
And also with us from St. Petersburg, Florida, is NPR's TV critic, Eric Deggans. Hi, Eric.
What up? How's it going?
Well, how's it going with you? I think that's the question. We are all up late. And the first thing that I want to do is run down some big winners. Best drama series was The Handmaid's Tale. Comedy series was Veep. Limited series was Big Little Lies. TV movie was an episode of Black Mirror called San Junipero.
Uh-huh.
Those are all things that are led by women, I notice.
Yep.
It's our year.
You get one.
Should we mention that Hulu made history here?
Mm-hmm.
First streaming service to win Best Drama Series.
Yeah, and if you called that about 3 years ago, you'd put money down on that. Yeah, you'd absolutely.
I mean, Netflix spends billions of dollars a year on content, $6 billion a year on content. And God knows how much they spent on their Emmy campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they created a structure in L.A. where they brought people in to listen to panel discussions and hear about their new shows. And Hulu wins, beats Netflix and Amazon. That's amazing to me. And it shows the power of a galvanizing hit. You know, Handmaid's Tale has sort of crystallized what Hulu can do as an original provider of television in a way that House of Cards did for Netflix a while ago and Transparent did for Amazon a while ago.
Yeah.
And both of those places have not come up with kind of a defining hit in that same way since then.
Yeah.
And I think Hulu snuck in under the wire and kind of took it from them.
Yeah, I want to ask you one other thing about this, which is, do you think that it makes a difference that Netflix and Amazon both drop all the episodes of something all at once so that it burns very hot, but it tends to be very fast? I thought of, like, Stranger Things was a little bit like that.
Yeah,
everybody was super excited about it, but only for a shorter period of time. Hulu, with Handmaid's Tale, kind of split the difference. They would put out a couple episodes at a time, but it meant that there were episodes coming out over, you know, maybe a month or two instead of, you know, one day. Do you suppose there's any possibility that people who are used to seeing a series that drops every week, that a longer conversation would help them?
Well, it's hard to know because it's hard to know how much the screeners actually affect the voting.
Yeah.
Because once a show is nominated, then, you know, they send in a representative episode.
Right.
And then the voters are supposed to screen that and base their votes on that.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was doing the Emmy voting, in fact, I did. I did a little segment called The Deggies where I, like, picked my own winners. And, you know, Handmaid's Tale was a show that I would have picked.
Yeah. Glenn, was there anything about this ceremony that made you very happy, or very unhappy.
You know, I thought the opening number was great. So, solid A minus on the opening number. The monologue, however, C minus.
Yeah.
The jokes weren't there. That kind of extended over the course of the evening. Now, there weren't a lot of bits. There weren't a lot of things, like a lot of stage business that they would do, like they would do for the Oscars, where it'd be like a celebration of the movies or a celebration of television. But, you know, I mean, I love the idea of RuPaul as Emmy. I love that idea. The execution wasn't there. I the jokes just didn't land, but she looked great. Dolly Parton and Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda show up as a salute to 9 to 5, basically, and the jokes aren't there, but they look great. I mean, it fills you with a sense of warmth, of nostalgia.
It did.
And yeah, but I think Donald Glover taking home directing and acting was the high point for me because I love Atlanta. I love him. I love seeing him happy, which you don't necessarily get to see on
happy.
Atlanta.
Happy in a purple, in a wonderful purple tux.
Looking great. Again, also seeing Elizabeth Moss smiling and happy because you don't get to see that on Handmaid's Tale. It's a meta thing.
Glenn brought up Donald Glover, and in winning for directing Atlanta, he was the first black director to win for directing a comedy series.
Yeah,
that's
2017.
Shocking. And also Lena Waithe, who I like to think of as friend of the show, Lena Waithe, because we interviewed her once, won with Aziz Ansari for writing the Thanksgiving episode of Master of None on Netflix, and she's the first black woman to win for writing a comedy series.
Yeah, that is actually my favorite moment of the telecast.
Yeah.
The moment when they come up, and they're winning, you know, it's best writing in a comedy. It's not necessarily like a major, massive award, and they got one of the first big standing ovations. And it was very clear that the episode of TV that they wrote the Thanksgiving episode of Master of None together, that episode clearly meant a lot to a lot of people in the crowd. And her speech, Lena Waithe's speech, was so gorgeous.
I love y'all. And last but certainly not least, my LGBTQIA family. I see each and every one of you. The things that make us different, those are our superpowers. Every day when you walk out the door, put on your imaginary cape and go out there and conquer the world, because the world would not be as beautiful as it is if we weren't in it.
I got to say, I love the diversity of the winners, and I love the fact that the usual suspects didn't win unless
they were Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Unless they were deserving. I mean, you know, you can make the case for Julia Louis-Dreyfus every year. I'm not mad that she's won six times in a row, because she is kicking butt in that role. But to have Anne Dowd win, supporting actress at a time when she wasn't favored to win, to have Riz Ahmed win, you know, when everybody thought they were just going to give it to Robert De Niro because it was his first Emmy nomination, even Sterling K. Brown's win as drama actor. I mean, I picked him to win, but that was a significant win too, because This Is Us didn't win any other major awards.
Surprising.
And to have him call out Andre Brower in his acceptance speech and go back to Frank Pemberton. It reminded me of what it was like to see a character like Frank Pemberton, a black character I'd never seen on television like that before. And to realize that when I saw Sterling K. Brown playing Randall, that was another black character I had never really seen before on television. And to see the through line, I didn't see it until he said it. But then I saw it, and it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, a highlight of every awards show is one in which Sterling K. Brown gives an incredibly charming speech.
Yeah.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
I could watch that guy. Ironically, I could watch that guy give a speech all night, and yet he's the one they cut off.
It's crazy. They let Nicole Kidman go on and hit the Gersh Agency and keep going past the Gersh Agency.
That is the point of...
That's the point.
Thank you guys for saying that, because I didn't want nobody to be calling me, you know, disgruntled or, you know, whatever.
No,
you know,
no. Everybody noticed that.
You know.
Everybody.
But yes.
Yeah. Nicole Kidman, look, you know, bless her. I think she was good in that show. But, you know, it kind of went on. And I think one of the problems that award shows have is they're not good at on the fly prioritizing as between, yes, nobody wants to play off Nicole Kidman. Who knows what the negotiations are about all of that. But at the same time, what it winds up looking like is Nicole Kidman is a movie actress. I mean, this is sort of the best like way to look at it is Nicole Kidman is a movie actress, so she gets to stand up and talk at great length about a wide variety of things. It's not as if she reserved her time to talk just about the issue of domestic violence and, you know, that her show was largely concerned with. It's that, you know, she also wanted to talk about her kids in a kind of an odd segment of the speech, I would say. You know, she went on, and then you get Sterling K. Brown up there, who is saying these really special, charming, funny things, and he's not so familiar. You haven't seen him talk quite so many times. And he gets cut off, and it was not a good look.
He got cut off, but it also seemed like Elizabeth Moss, who came after him, got time too. So yep. I don't know. I wish I could be right next to some of these people sometimes and say, hey, man, I can tell you what this is going to look like tomorrow.
Right. Exactly.
Don't play them off. I can tell you what the headlines are going to say.
Exactly.
You know?
Regardless of your intentions, it doesn't even matter. If we give you the benefit of the doubt regarding your intentions, it doesn't even matter.
Well, speaking of headlines, there's going to be some talk tomorrow about Sean Spicer in his little cameo at the beginning. I didn't think it worked because I think once you get that shot of Anna Chlumsky being shocked at his coming out from backstage, once you get that, all the comedic power, all the comedic kinetic energy is shot.
That's true.
And there's nowhere else to go. And whatever he does, it's just going to be smaller.
Her face was the funniest thing in the entire
bit. The funniest thing. The shock of that is enough. Mm-hmm. You don't need him to kind of do a little bit.
This will be the largest audience to witness an Emmys, period. Both in person and around the world.
Wow, that really soothes my fragile ego.
Well, I just think the thing with that was that they were lampooning a moment that a lot of people think was a low point for the communications office when he came out and said something that a lot of journalists felt was not true. And people were saying that on social media, that they felt like the show was enabling him lampooning something where, you know, he came out, it was his first time in front of the press, he tried to intimidate them, and then he also said something that a lot of people felt wasn't true. So if it had been lampooning a lighter moment, I think it might have worked.
I think there's also a question about readiness to allow people to be in on jokes.
Right.
And we actually had this conversation about Lance Armstrong being
being
in the Andy Samberg bicycle kind of mock documentary.
Tour de pharmacy,
Has this person kind of gone the full cycle for people who think he has sinned in some way, done the kind of the repentance and the little bit of waiting that you have to do? And I think in this case, for people who were so distressed by some of what happened with Sean Spicer, you know, it's even shorter. It's kind of like he only left a couple months ago. So people don't feel like that time has passed to allow the person to then use their own actions as a joke that they are in on.
There's a sense that he hasn't earned the right to be in on the joke.
Right. So Julia Louis-Dreyfus again, Elizabeth Moss.
Now, I don't want to breeze past Julia Louis-Dreyfus quite so quickly because this is somebody who's achieved something momentous. Not only 6 consecutive wins as best actress in a comedy, which no one's done before. She's got 8 Emmys total, which ties her with Cloris Leachman for the most wins by any single performer.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
She's achieved a lot, and she's done it in a way where people are still not saying that she doesn't deserve it, which I think is also kind of remarkable.
Now, when Candace Bergen achieved this milestone, she took herself out of the running for Murphy Brown.
Yep.
She just didn't want to hog it. I don't get the sense that Julia Louis-Dreyfus is going to take that step.
Yeah. We've only got one more season of Veep, and then that's it anyway.
Yeah, so. which will
be not going to sit out the final season. It's not going to happen.
I don't like the idea of hating on somebody just because they've been successful. If the show fell off, I'd be like, okay, fine. But it hasn't. So, you know, bring it on. You know?
To me, Veep was not the best comedy show of the year. It was a little bit of a quibble for me, but I mean, I'm never going to sit there with my arms folded when Julia Louis-Dreyfus wins an Emmy. She's great.
Right. I think there's a difference between do you stomp around and say, I can't stand them. They're you know, like people got to be with certain other shows in the past.
Family.
Otter and May, Emily Fay, or even Asia Frey.
Dang, that's a deep cut. You're going back.
It's not that. It's more just the thing of like, I agree with Stephen. I think I wouldn't have given it to them this year, but that's partly just because there's a ton of stuff on TV. I really like TV comedy right now, whether you're talking about, like Stephen said, Atlanta and Master of None, but also, like, I know Eric really likes Blackish. I love Blackish. I think Insecure has had some really good episodes recently that indicate that they're kind of getting a stronger sense of the direction of that show.
I always love to see new blood. I mean, I would have loved to have seen a show like Speechless get nominated. Yeah. I mean, there's so many great comedies right now.
Yeah. I think we should also mention, and we touched on it a little bit, but that Saturday Night Live had a very big night as well. Kate McKinnon, Alec Baldwin playing Donald Trump. And some other
directing.
Directing and some other stuff.
Variety sketch series. The first time a network TV show has won this category in a while.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. All right. That all sounds good to me. Before we go, we have one other thing that we wanted to talk about. We wanted to take a quick moment to remember the actor, Harry Dean Stanton, who passed away this Friday at the age of 91. He appeared in over 100 films and shows, including Cool Hand Luke, Alien, Pretty in Pink, Twin Peaks, Repo Man, and Paris, Texas. Glenn, you're a Harry Dean Stanton person. Where does your fandom come from?
Well, I mean, he played Bud in Repo Man, and I think you could make an argument that he played Bud in everything that he ever did. He just seems like a guy named Bud. He is a Flannery O'Connor character come to life. He is raw-boned, rangy, bandy-legged. He's all those things. I mean, I came to love him in Repo Man, of course. Also an Alien. Paris, Texas is a great film, which I think you're going to talk a little bit more about.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Last Temptation of Christ, playing Paul / Saul in a very memorable, very weird turn. Yeah. And, of course, I just saw him, in the Twin Peaks, The Return, where he was this force of good and just empathy in a world that doesn't have a lot of it, and just radiated goodness and down-homeness in a way that just made you always want to see him on screen.
One of my favorite Harry Dean Stanton recent movie moments, the Avengers movie.
That's what I was saying.
Oh, Glenn was talking about
I was telling you, don't remember him.
He's the janitor.
But he was there, man.
You got a condition.
It's funny because one thing that happens with really good actors is sometimes they have a role in a less, you know, perhaps important and weighty movie that is seen by either more people or a different group of people, which is why you have a whole bunch of people who think of Harry Dean Stanton as the dad in Pretty in Pink. And that was one of my impressions of him. Certainly I had others. But after he died, when people were talking about great movies, I was sitting around at home and I watched Paris, Texas.
Oh, man.
And boy, is it a good movie. It is... one of the writers is Sam Shepard, and it's directed by Wim Wenders. And if you have never seen Paris, Texas, it is a terrific movie. And he is wonderful, wonderful in it, mesmerizing. So we did want to take a moment and remember. Great and great and powerful, Harry Dean
Stanton. I'm sure that movie's cool, but does it have a Hulk? No.
Eric would like you to see The Avengers. And appreciate Harry Dean Stanton.
28 seconds of screen time.
All right. Well, let us know what you thought about the Emmys and feel free to share your Harry Dean Stanton thoughts. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet at us at PCHH. Eric, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
Please review us on Apple Podcasts. That helps listeners find the show. On Friday, we're going to have our fall movie preview, so we will see you then.